It is also encouraging to note that here and there some orthodox teachings are beginning to sound like beginner's lessons in metaphysics. The modern interest in psychology and parapsychology is also encouraging. But true psychology becomes metaphysics, and metaphysics must enlarge its concepts and take in parapsychology and the hidden truths of the Eastern seers and of the space beings before it becomes cosmic. Metaphysics has accomplished a great deal, but where is the metaphysician who has reached an understanding of the relationship of consciousness to energy, or the cosmic truth that life's manifestations occur in octaves of vibratory frequencies? Hidden gems in Eastern teachings. From our analysis, the teachings of the space beings appear to support many of the principles taught in Oriental philosophies by seers of the Far East. Unfortunately, these hidden gems of cosmic truth are little known or understood in our Western civilizations. The space beings also support the original teachings of all the great masters but state that most of them have been so watered down by man that they are hardly recognizable. Western religionists are forever trying to get hold of absolute truths and to reduce infinite life to a few dogmatic statements of truth. In the Oriental philosophies, the relative nature of most truths is far better understood. Most truths are relative due to the fact that, as a man thinketh, so is he. To put it another way, that which an individual accepts as absolute reality at any given period of his progress, that which he accepts as true, is reality to him at that time. It is not necessarily reality to another. Each individual makes his own reality at any given period by his thoughts and feelings, thus proving the fundamental truth that man, individual consciousness, is a creator, the creator of his own individual world consisting of what he is conscious of. If he is only conscious of limitations and discord, these qualities externalize themselves as his life's reality or experience. If he is conscious of harmony, beauty and abundance, these qualities become his experience. If he is only conscious of three-dimensional life, he is what we call a human being. If his consciousness is expanded to include life in higher frequencies, higher planes of consciousness, he becomes a spaceman to the exact extent of that expansion of consciousness. In other words, he is less limited in his consciousness of total existence. Our failure to understand this relationship of consciousness to reality is a potent factor in keeping us earthbound. In certain Oriental teachings, what we in the West love to call reality they call a dream, or an illusion or maya. While this concept in general simply flabbergasts the Western mind, nevertheless when once understood it as logical, illuminating and helpful, it is a recognition which Western culture would do well to note. That consciousness produces its own reality, but it is not a fixed reality because the producing or accepting consciousness, if it understands this principle, can change this reality or outward experience at any time by a certain inward accession of controlled thought and feeling. This is the mastery of outer experience which we have lost and must regain if we wish to progress beyond the limitations of physical life. The understanding of the Oriental term dream for outward reality or circumstance or experience and the term dreamer for the individual consciousness is a definite step toward the regaining of our mastery of life. Mastery is the inward control of outer experience, mental manipulation of what we call energy or matter, in the attainment of which many of our space brothers are far in advance of us. However, they assure us that in time we will regain our lost powers along this line. We have temporarily forgotten that we are the dreamer and not the dream. We have forgotten how to wake up out of the limiting dream of three-dimensional life. We are calling attention to this principle because of its importance. To understand once again the relationship of consciousness to reality and experience and to regain control of consciousness is to grasp the very keys to freedom. I am the dreamer. I am never the dream. I control the dream. Such concepts are the highway back to attainment. This is the very basis of the greater mastery and greater freedom of our brothers and sisters in outer space. Justification. Does all this mean that those sincere religionists who are filled with reverence, worship, faith and hope will not find justification because they know nothing beyond the limited teachings of a certain creed or group to which they belong? No, indeed. We do not think this at all. Every bit of reverence, faith and hope, every upward or unselfish desire or longing, every reaching out for the perfection, happiness and beauty of life will certainly find its own justification. In the larger view, all paths lead up the mountain. Some choose the high road and some the low road. Some even choose the black path of error and the long and painful evolution of resistance to cosmic truth. But all of us came from the light, and return to it we must, sometime, somehow. There is a cosmic law of justice always and forever in operation. The seeds sown in consciousness today produce the reality of tomorrow for each and every one of us individually. Salvation is always an individual matter. Even salvation on the most narrow, intolerant and exclusive basis will be justified. But while the individual who has projected exclusive salvation for himself or his group while denying it to others is reaping his narrow reward, it is very possible that the outcast will be reaping a greater reward because the outcast may have had a broader view of salvation and of universal brotherhood. Someday all the sons of God will learn that all that I have is thine, all that the one great consciousness has created belongs to all individual consciousness everywhere. A substitute for war. This particular Earth's civilization is a destructive civilization which glories in killing enemies. It started back some times ago when some ancestor of ours picked up a stone and killed his enemy. He thought that killing was a positive method of disposing of his enemy. Even so, today many of our most civilized and intelligent Earthmen believe that killing enemies is a normal and natural way of disposing of them for good and all. But what actually happened to our primitive ancestor? His enemy did not die because there is literally no such thing as death. Only the part of his enemy which was visible to the human senses disappeared temporarily. The enemy went temporarily into another dimension of life, possibly with hatred and revenge engraved on his indestructible consciousness. This very hatred brought him quickly back to Earth through cosmic re-embodiment, and he went forth to even the score, to kill some enemies himself. The stone in time became a club, a spear, a catapult, a cannon, TNT, a bomb and now an atom bomb or guided missile. That is the pattern of this round of civilization, caught in the hypnotic spell of killing enemies as the only safe and sane method of defense, of disposing of one's enemies. In the last 3,600 years we understand there have been 14,000 wars on Earth. Man always manages to find a rationalization and a justification for all of his violations of cosmic harmony. Killing enemies has been and still is the ruling mania, the outstanding psychosis of this round of Earth civilization. Bigger and better killing methods, for defense of course, is the goal and the preoccupation of this civilization. Does anyone doubt this? Let us consider the financial emphasis on killing alone. To this effort to kill enemies first before they kill you, many nations are allocating over half of their tax income. Today, when we consider what the nations of the Earth are spending for killing potential enemies, we have quite a picture of a civilization that is out of balance. We are not criticizing any human action by any nation, we are presenting the cosmic picture which our civilization presents to the space beings who have not known war for thousands, yes even millions of years. They calmly tell us we are the only planet left in our entire solar system which has not discovered a substitute for war. What we need is psychoanalysis and psychiatric treatment on a cosmic scale. We are slow learners and time is running out on this civilization. After centuries of opportunity we still do not understand the cosmic law of cause and effect. We do not even understand basic metaphysics. Which came first, an enemy or the mental concept of a brother as an enemy? In the correct cosmic answer to this question lies the key to our escape from annihilation at the hands of our own destructive creations. For centuries we have been creating enemies in two dimensions of life by our attention, our thoughts, our feelings and our acts. Will we never learn that we are creators? Until we learn the cosmic secret of stopping this vicious chain reaction at its source, in the realm of our thoughts, our concepts and our feelings, we shall never escape our enemies or the necessity of killing them before they kill us. Destruction breeds destruction. we experience that which we create. Creating destruction eventually enfolds the Creator in His own destructive creation. Now we on Earth are at the crossroads, the inevitable consequences of our throwing the weight of our creative abilities into destruction for centuries past has finally reached its inevitable climax. This civilization has achieved its goal of magnificent destruction, a destruction so perfect, so complete, that its usage will destroy the user. What else, in the name of cosmic law, did we expect? Does this mean that the democracies of the world, which despite all their faults are nevertheless supporting the fundamentally correct cosmic idea of individual liberty, should suddenly lay down their arms, and open themselves to extermination by the anti-democratic forces of the Earth? Certainly not. That would not be intelligent action either from a human or a cosmic viewpoint. But it does mean that all mankind everywhere must sincerely seek and must find and utilize a substitute for killing enemies before our own destructive tendencies wipe us all from the surface of the planet. This is not something impossible to find because our elder brothers found it ages ago. If we had devoted 10% of the attention and effort which we have spent on destruction to sincerely seeking a substitute for war and using it, we would not be in our present predicament. We have been looking high and low for destructive energy, destructive radiations. Why do we not look high and low for constructive radiations and put them to use? For every action there is a reaction. We know this, thus the very destructiveness of atomic radiation points to the existence of an equally powerful constructive radiation. This constructive radiation is in existence, but we must rediscover it and put it to use ourselves. There is a cosmic radiation aura which, acting as a powerful cosmic catalyst, actually makes possible the harmonizing of the most antagonistic activities of man. It actually nullifies hatreds and antagonisms. It takes away even the desire to be destructive. It turns enemies into brothers. Every great master or teacher knows of it. So do our space brothers. We must seek this radiation more diligently than we have the atom bomb. We must find it and put it to use quickly before it is too late. Chapter 30. Prophecies and Flying Saucers. Part of the saucer interest we found was in connection with prophecies and the desire to know the future of this Earth and the relation of the space beings to future events. In order to understand this phase of saucer interest, we spent considerable time acquainting ourselves with various prophetic writings. We studied the Bible prophecies, the Pyramid, the Nostradamus prophecies and many religious prophecies and other ancient and modern prophecies of both individuals and groups, including some received by OSC. Some of these prophecies referred specifically to the coming of the space people. Others were of a more general nature and referred more to great changes coming to the Earth and to a great new age. Nevertheless, many saucer students are vitally interested in prophetic messages, both modern and ancient. One thing impressed us tremendously. We actually found people who were terribly frightened by certain prophecies. Also, we found some who were actually trying to run away from destruction or from the localities which they believed were destined for destruction in accordance with various prophecies. These people were not ignorant or uneducated human beings. Far from it. Some of them were highly educated individuals. We also found a few scared people who were building retreats not because they were influenced by prophecies but because of their fear of the atom bomb, but that is another story. Regarding the people who were running away from potential cataclysms, most of them wanted to get away from big cities and from geographical fault lines and from low areas because of their fear of earthquakes and floods. This seemed to us to be an appalling situation. In the name of reason and common sense, what we asked ourselves was the answer to all this fear and running away? What represented a constructive, worthwhile and helpful answer or even a good working philosophy regarding these prophecies and the fear they engendered? We hope that the following remarks may be of practical help to some of our readers, particularly those who may be suffering from such fears. We shall try to present the best and most constructive approach which we were able to find on this matter of prophecies and disasters. End of the world prophecies. The coming of the sources has revived many ancient prophecies that the end of the world is at hand and has also spawned many new dire predictions along this line. We are now referring to those prophecies which declare the imminent destruction of the planet Earth itself. We have discovered an interesting way of dealing with fearful prophecies which we would like to pass on to our readers. It is this: the more frightening and horrible a prophecy is, the more we insist on knowing all the harrowing details. Do not be afraid of the blood-curdling details, view them with detachment. Pin the prophet down. Let him talk. Never let him get away with indefinite predictions or vague forebodings. Insist on specific facts, events and dates. Get the boundaries of the prophecy. Put a frame round it. Classify it. Every prophecy has its limitations and every false prophet sooner or later runs out of wind. I'll try this sometime. It is a sure defense against becoming the victim of a fearful prophecy. Remember, no prophecy can hurt you unless you permit yourself to fear it. From this point of view, let us take a good straight look at the end of the world prophecies. The first thing to note is that there is nothing new about such prophecies. Religious groups and individuals have been foretelling the end of the world for many centuries. Recently, the advent of sources has simply given them a new peg on which to hang their predictions and a new means of gaining public attention and unhappy converts. Every so often, all through different generations, certain groups have declared the end of the world on a certain date, sold all their earthly possessions, dressed in white robes and cheerfully, usually with hymns singing, awaited the end of the world which never came. It was a little embarrassing for a while, and some followers deserted these groups because they had been misled by them. However, after a lull, such groups start up all over again because, as P.T. Barnum used to remark, there is one born every minute. Belief is a strange thing, but let us remember that we individually always have something to say about what we believe. If we accept this sort of thing and fear it, then the prophet is us in his power. We must then be prepared to bear the consequences of our acceptance and belief and to live with the fears which go with it. The reader is entitled to believe anything he wishes, but may we state categorically that everything we learned in our saucer research indicates that this planet is going to remain a planet for many billions of years. Hence, no one need be concerned about its end at all. A planet is a schoolroom from the viewpoint of the space beings who are the guardians of planets, and this particular planet is so needed to teach mankind certain lessons that it will be preserved at all costs, even if spaceship intervention becomes necessary. The space beings are not a threat to this planet but an assurance that man himself will not poison it beyond redemption. End of Man on Earth prophecies. Now let us look at prophecies concerning the total destruction of man from this planet. This is an entirely different matter from the destruction of the planet itself. The latter will not take place. At least we have convinced ourselves of this. The former depends entirely upon man himself. It is man's privilege, if he wishes, to destroy himself physically from the earth. If he chooses this course, he will, in time, return again and again until he finally learns the lesson of the uselessness of destruction. Man's destruction of himself from the earth is a possibility. A general atomic war is all that is needed to accomplish this in a hurry. If man decides on this course, there is no point in trying to run away from this destruction. There is no place in which to hide from atomic radiation. It cannot be confined to any locality. It will spread around the earth and desolate it until it is like the Sahara Desert. Water, food, vegetation, rocks, soil, the entire good earth and its atmosphere will vibrate to radiations which the human body simply cannot withstand. So why try to run away from our homes, our friends, our jobs? On this score, the place we run to will be equally uninhabitable. It all depends on man. It can happen quickly or it can happen slowly by the slow poisoning of the earth by our scientists who insist they know everything, although the space messages say they do not. If we do not like this picture, it is up to us to do something about it. We must impose restraints upon ourselves, upon all nations and upon the scientists, and we must find a substitute for this kind of defense. In our research we have found no other answer. Man after years of destruction has reached the crossroads of his earthly existence. However, there is much hope. In the last few years we have avoided a worldwide atomic war. Few realize how near we came to it, but tensions are easing as this is being written. Let us hope that this condition will continue, but the danger of slow poisoning still remains. The fulfillment or negation of the prophecy that man will destroy himself from the earth depends upon man himself. Let us hope that Earth man will wake up in time to the realization that the cosmic climate of destruction is self-destruction and that the only salvation is self-imposed control and restraint. 254. The Remnant Prophecies. We found some very ancient and highly respected prophecies which we call the Remnant Prophecies. They go something like this: man will be destroyed from the face of the earth, but a remnant will be saved, and out of this remnant will come the future inhabitants of the planet in a new age. If one studies the ancient civilizations of Atlantis and Lemuria, it appears that some such occurrence may have taken place in the past. So far as we are concerned, if man elects to try world suicide, it may occur again. We have no objection to the idea of a remnant being saved. None whatever. In fact, it seems to us to be a very nice concept. What irked us just a bit about these prophecies was the size of the remnant and the obvious scramble for the seats of salvation. One such prophecy mentions the figure of 144,000. Whether this be interpreted literally or figuratively might make quite a difference to the other 2,399,856,000 people left out in the cold, assuming an Earth population of 2.4 billion. Nevertheless, we did run across some groups which took this matter most literally and most seriously. While we certainly do not wish to interfere with anyone's sincere or sacred beliefs, we were just a bit interested to observe that this slightly limited plan of salvation invariably included the members of the group, shall we say, on the right side of the ledger. Also, it was intriguing to learn that several such groups in different countries, unknown to each other, have each already practically filled the quota. Somehow or other, the fact that we ourselves did not have reserved seats in these groups did not seem to worry us. But we did rejoice that there were others who were fortunate enough to be among the chosen few. Storms, floods and earthquakes. It may surprise our readers to learn that the consensus of opinion among the Sorcerer students was that we will have storms, floods and earthquakes in the years and decades ahead on an unprecedented scale. We are experiencing some of these right now. One basic cause is the new radiation into which the Earth has moved. This causes an accelerated melting of the polar ice caps and gives us an Aquarian or water age. Another basic cause of cataclysmic disturbances is violent acts of what man calls nature or acts of God. However, we have learned that from a cosmic viewpoint, while these appear to man to be acts of nature, they are actually and basically man-produced disturbances which come about through a sort of reflex of nature. On more advanced planets, man has learned how to control the weather and nature by harmonious thoughts, feelings and peaceful mental activities. On our planet, however, man for centuries has permitted himself to project unrestrained thoughts into the atmosphere and to express uncontrolled feelings of irritation, hatred, jealousy, enharmony, violence and destruction. Man is a creator and always has been, and his every thought and feeling qualifies the energy which flows through him. This destructively qualified energy of man has for centuries flowed out into the energy surrounding man and the earth and into the energy out of which the planet and its atmosphere is formed. This outflowing has created stresslines and tensions in what we call nature or the elements. This process of miscreation has a long-range cumulative effect of which Earthman is ignorant. In many a message, the great space beings have pointed out that nature always gives back to man, through long time cycles, his own creations. These inharmonious and destructive thought creations of man are now in the process of returning to him in the form of violent storms, floods, and earthquakes. He has no one to blame for this but himself and his ignorance of cosmic law. For centuries man has been asking for it. We are now entering a new age, and this phenomenon is a part of this new cycle. There, chickens are coming home to roost. These things will take place, and they will take their toll. This is part of the house cleaning process which initiates a new age. In these events, nature knows its own, and salvation, as always, is an individual and a spiritual matter, a matter of our individual attunement to the harmony of life. There is no such thing as cosmic injustice. Is the bed of the Pacific Ocean rising? Yes. We understand that this is true. The bed of the Pacific Ocean is now in the process of rising to form the New Age continent, and so also are portions of the floor of the Atlantic. There will be vast changes in the geography of the Earth. If this seems utterly fantastic to some, it is only because most of us live in abject ignorance of long-range cosmic activities. They are not things of common knowledge because they require a cosmic perspective which few people make the effort to acquire. Most of us are only interested in cycles of a few years' duration. Few indeed are trained to think in terms of periods of 100,000 years or of 1,000,000 years. Does this rising of the ocean floors represent a frightening event, a terrible impending catastrophe for mankind? No, it does not, for three cosmic reasons. First, it is a very slow operation, and it will take decades to complete. Second, it is a controlled operation under the supervision of the planetary guardians. Finally, it is a cosmically beneficent activity. It is part of a long-time cycle of purification which is common to planets or cosmic schoolrooms. As previously pointed out, the Earth is not a dead thing of lifeless rocks and minerals as most of us assume it is. It is a living unit of cosmic evolution with a destiny of its own. Through long-term cycles, dry lands become oceans and oceans become dry lands. After thousands of years under salt water, the lands are thus purified for further habitation. The schoolroom is thus renovated and made ready for new pupils. There is no point in becoming disturbed by these long-time changes. They are controlled in the best interests of the planets and their inhabitants. Is this civilization ending? Yes, we understand this civilization is ending, dying if you wish, but the ending or dying of a civilization is not a matter of the sudden death of all the inhabitants of a planet. The ending of a civilization means the ending of the ways in which a civilization acts, its manner of doing things, its customs, institutions and modes of living. In this sense, this civilization is dying. We are going into a new age, and the way we do things, our mode of life will be different and better. One process by which this is occurring is by the normal life and death cycle with which we are all familiar. Every day some people pass on, and new babies are born. The point is that in the new age, the quality of the babies will be much higher. The unprogressive people, those who resist progress and higher development, are passing on, and new age souls are coming into birth to possess the planet. Some sorcerers estimate that there are already about 10 million new age souls here on Earth by the birth process, and the number is daily increasing. Another phase of this process is the great influx of higher and finer ideas and ideals. Man's thoughts, concepts and mental processes are undergoing great improvement. The old order, along with many of its shortcomings in every branch of life, is dying, and new age souls motivated by higher ideals and capable of making a much finer civilization on Earth are flooding in. Prophecies in general, we feel it is very unfortunate indeed if people permit themselves to become upset or frightened by fearful prophecies in connection with the coming of the spaceships. Undoubtedly there is some great cosmic event in the offing, and various concepts of this are presented in the last chapter. But the problem is not the space people. They will do their part in helping us. The problem is mankind and what man will do in the decades ahead. There are many false prophets in evidence these days, and many are being deceived by them. Fear is a terrible thing in itself and must be avoided. We hope that the following fact may help allay fear due to certain prophecies. Over 70% of the fearful prophecies which we studied and which incorporated definite dates for great catastrophes have not come true, And some of these were from what many people consider the most authentic and reliable of sources, the Wafir prophecies of destruction. If great emergencies arise, let us meet them when and if they transpire. Let us keep calm, let us remember the saying, the only thing to fear is fear itself. 1. This is no idle point.